Blog Talk Radio.
A Monday warrior, mean, mean stride. Today's Tom Sawyer, mean, mean pride.
Good afternoon on the East Coast, good morning on the West Coast, and a great day to you wherever and whenever you may be listening. My name is Jason Dias, broadcasting live from the studio of eloquenceonline.net in beautiful, sunny New Braunfels, Texas, Republic thereof, and a long, long walk, but a short flight on the Millennium Falcon up to Charleston, South Carolina, for the first time this summer, Dr. Troy Hall.
Hey, Jason. Everything is going awesome here in Charleston, so... We are so excited because each and every day, you know, we perform for our members.
Yep.
So we definitely are the brand that asks the question, that answers the question, and says, yes, yes, people want more from us.
Absolutely, they do. We were talking about it in text and in email. You have an employee at Big Blue, South Carolina Federal Credit Union, who has been there for 40 years. So since 1977, when I was in third grade, by the way, and apparently the credit unions left her wanting more as well as an employee.
Well, it is. And she is Belle is her first name. And so that's all I'll use because we've not really chatted more about
Belle.
That with her yet, other than we hope to have her on the show here. But she's on vacation this week. But she truly represents that power of performance. She is the kind of individual that when our folks ask the question, if our brand were a band, would you be wanting more? And,
right.
And the answer is yes for Belle. And so here's the thing about this 40 years. Our organization celebrates the organizational intelligence that individuals bring to the company. And one thing I can tell you for sure is that when people are here for 10, 20, 30, and even 40 years, they are here because they want to be here.
Absolutely.
And they are here because they are still contributing to the purpose of the organization. They are not someone who is just occupying a seat. And
absolutely.
So
they're still putting on a great live performance. They put on that great live performance every day.
Absolutely, and she is like a star in her particular area, but she is so humble. She is such a humble star that she doesn't take credit for these things, but she is like she's like a piece of glue, you know, that kind of holds some things together, and it just. Really awesome. So we're very happy in the way that her leadership is, the mentorship that she provides to individuals who are first starting their career or even others who've been around for a while. And the stories, when we posted her 40-year celebration on our site and then we posted it publicly through social media, the outpouring of love from individuals that have has touched their lives is amazing.
I saw it.
Yeah,
I mean,
amazing.
And oh, by the way, folks, Dr. Troy has email evidence that I was geeked up about a 30-year anniversary because I couldn't do the math. 1977 subtracted from 2017, which is why we say on the show, he is the PhD. I am the GED. Barely. GED. Barely. Hey, the name of the episode. 10 years ago, I used to give a spoken session. It was a follow-up to my award-winning Generations of Members session. It was called Random Thoughts, the three things you're not supposed to talk about at work, but everybody does. And so the name of the episode today, Random Thoughts and the Rumor that Will Become the Reality. We're going to talk about that today. It is conference quality information without the expense report, and we're going to get to it all right after this.
I'm in a New York state of mind.
I was in a New York state of mind on Wednesday. Dr. Troy interviewed a gentleman named Mike Matone. He is from a big, big credit union in New York State, the oldest and largest credit union in New York State. And he was the Young Professional of the Year, selected by the Credit Union Association of New York as they celebrate their centennial, 100 years as an independent league, the New York Credit Union Association. And you and I have had people on the show that have won these leadership awards. And we always ask them, hey, if you were made president of a credit union tomorrow, what would be the first thing you did on Monday morning? And he said the funniest thing. He said, well, as soon as I snapped off the obligatory Instagram picture of my new desk, and then he started talking about it. And I thought that was such a generational moment. Like you said earlier, he was still humble. When you hear the whole answer, and we're going to get him on the show, it's just fascinating. But I just thought to myself, do you remember when the rumor of Instagram became the reality? And I had that experience. Dr. David Tuyo, who has filled in on this show many times, was just made finally a CEO of a credit union out in Southern California. I think one of the big rumors that is becoming a reality right before our eyes and ears, Dr. Troy, is this generational transformation of C-level leadership in the credit union marketplace from the baby boomers to the Gen X and even millennials.
It is, and what we know from our data is that 75% of the workforce will be comprised of the millennial generation by 2021. And so that just goes to show, and doing quick math, and I'll do the math for you.
Since please do.
You demonstrated earlier that there were some challenges there. You know, we're really, well, according to you, we would be 3 years away, but we're four years away from that time frame. And so we do know that what will also happen is this is going to be one of the first times in the history of leadership that two generations will be vying to be in charge. So there will be so typically what would have happened is because of the sheer numbers, and the way it works is by numbers. It has nothing to do with qualifications and that. But when you're taking the traditionalists, which were my parents, and they were about 75 million, replacing them with baby boomers at 80 million, the likelihood is that with one of the 75 million transition from leadership, who was next was baby boomer because they were there. They were the major. But what we do recognize is that the Gen X group only represents about 45 million of the population, and then we're back to the 75 and 80 million for the Gen Y group. So we're going to see in leadership now both Gen X and Gen Y vying for leadership in these leadership positions. They both approach businesses. They may have some very similar value systems, you know, so it's not like it's horrible in the value systems, but they do approach the business a little differently and how they will actually engage. And there may be individuals who have different behaviors based on the generations, but that doesn't necessarily indicate success or failure. It's just how they choose to behave. And so I think it's interesting that I think what we're going to actually see more than anything is bigger change between the baby boomers and the next round of leadership than what we saw between the traditionalists and the baby boomers. And it
is
exactly technology.
Yes.
Yep. And technology is it. Technology is the factor. It's like if you say, well, what's the X factor? You know, what's the thing you didn't count on? The technology was not that prevalent between the two. There wasn't that much change between I shake your hand, I look you in the eye, I write you a letter, you know, because we really didn't get to the computer age until much later, where the computers were very active in our, and thank God for Al Gore, who invented the internet, because otherwise we wouldn't have had that. So, you know, okay, that was sarcasm for those folks
about.
Who are listening and thinking that,
Yes, I know. That was the name of the show. That was actually the name of the session, the three things you're not supposed to talk about at work: religion, politics, and gender. And yet we all did. I mean, when I gave that speech in 2007, you know, it was the last year of the second President Bush's administration. There was plenty of political stuff on the horizon and plenty of things that you could talk about out on the road. But you said something that really caught my attention. And you said the first time two generations were vying for those positions, competing for those positions. We did an episode a few weeks ago called The Competitive Cooperative. Competition is always part of part of the equation. And you said it, the leveling factor is technology. Gen X and the millennials both acquired that technological edge as adults, and the millennials grew up with it. And I just think it's very, very interesting that in this week, we saw Dr. David Tuyo, Gen Xer, just in every way, just like this keynote slide for Gen X, just put up a picture of Dr. David Tuyo. You're the perfect example of a baby boomer. And then this millennial, Mike Mottone from New York City, it just, you know, I didn't know a single Jay-Z song, Dr. Troy, until I downloaded that New York, New York song. And so I just felt like I got immersed into a bit of that demographic, and I actually liked it. I actually enjoyed the song when I listened to it for free on YouTube several times earlier this week. But that thing you just said, vying, competing for that desk in the CEO's office, which is generally nicer than the desk in the office of the person who oversees, you know, the contact center. I think that's a great point, because I think credit unions sometimes don't talk enough about the competitive aspect, even though it's a cooperative marketplace. Your thoughts?
It is. It's cooperative. But I think that's where competition exists, is in the realm of cooperation. And where competition does not exist is in the realm of collaboration. And that's why many times I've spoken on the topic of why credit unions need to move their definition from cooperative to collaborative, because in the realm of cooperative, I might share information with you, but I'll be guarded in what I share with you, because I don't want you to take that information and maybe have a gain in the market share. So you'll find that credit unions who are hundreds and hundreds of miles away are more free to share their information than ones who operate in the same backdoor space. But when you operate in a collaborative environment, the number one rule that you remember for collaboration is that everyone at the table needs each other. And so, therefore, you have laid aside all of those egos. You've laid aside separations of where you want to try to get an extra boost on someone else. And you actually start solving problems and issues because you all need each other. And the problems and solutions you're going to solve are going to benefit each other in some way equally, whether it's indirectly equally or overtly equally. There has to be equal response. And so that's also very important, because in collaboration, there is no gender in collaboration. When the individuals come to the table, they come as a blank slate to the table. And so therefore, everyone feels that they need each other. And again, no one has a one-up on each other. So there's no competition, again, in the realm of collaboration. So those are some of the things that distinguish the difference between cooperation and collaboration. And then one more point I'll make before you have an opportunity to ask me another question or interject is this. When our founding fathers used the word cooperation, the context of the word at the time implied collaboration. It's just that as we have evolved, then the word needs to take on a different contextual meaning than what it did. So when we say cooperation among cooperatives is one of the principles, the founding fathers, and in this case, sometimes if you have to say the founding mothers, just depending upon how people listen, you want to be able to say, or the founding people, they intended collaboration, because when you look at the formation of credit unions for what they were about, it's equal access, it's open membership, it's equal democracy, it's I'm helping people helping people. It's not me helping myself, it's not me helping somebody else, it's people together as a unit helping people together as a unit to solve some sort of issue, some sort of condition, some sort of something in that regard. And so you throw out the areas of conflict, you throw out gender, you throw out youth, you throw those particular things out. And you start working from the area of collaboration.
Exactly. Exactly. Great, great point. You know, I used to make the point when I was doing training as a professional trainer that in the concept of diversity, if you said, hey, come up with a really colorful logo and we put together a team that looked exactly like one another and said, you can use any media you want, and then took a team that was very diverse by the meaning of the word, but said, hey, you can only use a chalkboard and a piece of chalk. Well, they wouldn't have as great an outcome. And I love what you said. I'm trying to write down all the quote keepers I can, but it's like everybody comes to the table with a blank slate, and everyone around the table is there to advance the mission of the credit union or the vision of the brand. And if your brand were a band, would you leave the audience wanting more? You're listening to The Power Performance, the show that asks that very, very question. And like I said, it's just been an interesting week. I feel like I was immersed in that millennial generation as I prepared for that show on Wednesday. Hey, folks, listen, we're going to take a quick break. And since it is The Power of Performance, and it's rare that it's just myself and Dr. Troy on the show, this goes back 3 years now. You and I read on the air the great poem, Charge of the Light Brigade. And it was so cool that I texted you this morning, or I called you this morning, said, hey, let's do that again. This time it's going to be Ode to a Grecian Urn. And just think about that. Dr. Troy and I, we are not afraid to perform some great poetry on the air, and we're going to do it all right after this.
Man, when I'm listening to The Power of Performance, I just can't decide who's hotter, Jason or Troy.
That's tough.
Well, you can't tell.
The Power Performance, where the talk is hot and the hosts are
reading poetry.
Reading poetry. All right. Ode to a Grecian Urn by John Keats.
Thou shall, unravished bride of quietness, thou foster child of silence and slow time, sylvan historian, who canst thus express a flowery tale more sweetly than our rhyme? What leaf-fringed legend haunts about thy shape of deities or mortals, or of both, in temple or the dales of Arcady? What men or gods are these? What maiden's sloth? What mad pursuit? What struggle to escape? What pipes and timbrels? What wild essay?
Ah, happy, happy boughs that cannot shed your leaves, nor ever bid the spring adieu, and happy melodist, unwearied, forever piping songs, forever new. More happy love, more happy, happy love, forever warm and still to be enjoyed, forever panting and forever young, all breathing human passion far above that leaves a high heart, high sorrowful and cloyed, a burning forehead and a parching tongue.
Who are these coming to the sacrifice? To what green altar, O mysterious priest, leadest thou that heifer lowering at the skies, and all her silken flanks with garlands dressed? What little town by river or seashore or mountain built with peaceful citadel is emptied of this fork, this pious morn? And, little town, thy streets forevermore will silent be, and not a soul to tell while thou art desolate can e'er return.
O attic shape, fair attitude with breed of marble men and maidens overwrought with forest branches and the trodden weed, thou silent form, thou tease us out of thought as doth eternity cold, pastoral, when old age shall this generation waste. Thou shalt remain in midst of other woe then ours a friend to man to whom thou sayest, beauty is truth, truth is beauty, that is all ye need to know on earth, and all ye need to know. Nice, Dr. Troy, whoa! And this is why the studio audience is clapping, because I know that's the first time you saw that today. That was
first
awesome.
Time, and
yes.
And I will say, okay, so full disclosure, first paragraph, it should be what wild ecstasy, and I said essay, but I kept going because the deal is, dude, you just got to keep moving.
Just keep going.
You know, got to keep going, can't stop, can't correct it. You know, it's kind of like really good.
And but, right there, Dr. Troy has just shown you those four pillars of the power performance. You practice, you perform, and you review, and you repeat. Well, he didn't get a chance to practice. He performed. He reviewed it. We're not going to repeat it, but if we did, he would nail those handful of things. That was awesome. The only reason I saw that poem this week is that I'm going into my final year of coaching the poetry and prose team over at Cross Lutheran, and I've always wanted to have one of our eighth graders read a really, really challenging poem. And after that one, trust me, we're not going to use that one. That was a little too complicated, I think, for the eighth grade.
It was. It is, and for some contextual background for folks to really understand, you know, it is a romantic sort of representation from John Keats, written in the early 1800s, and it's to tell the story of an urn, so of a Grecian urn, and so what he's trying to do is he's making sense of the imagery that the artist had placed on the urn. So his inquiries and why he asked so many questions and did not answer so much was basically not sure what the intentions were behind the artist. But the one thing that he knew for sure, which he sums up in the very end, is that truth is beauty and beauty is truth, and all that you need to know, that is the most important in all of it. So it's almost like the truth is in the beauty, and the beauty in the eye of the beholder. So, you know, as you look at the urn, whether you can make sense of it or not, you can totally respect the beauty that the artist may have put into it, especially when you begin to empathize and to be able to understand maybe where that artist would be coming from in what they may depict. And so I think that's why this works very well for our show today and for some of the things that we're doing. And why and how this all connects itself is because when we speak about the things that we do, you and I don't speak it in an ugliness. We speak it in a beauty. It's in a truth. And sometimes the truth is ugly, but that can't be, we can't change that. So sometimes even when you depict, an artistic scene that may not necessarily be the best representation of humankind, the reality is it is still the truth. And there is beauty that resides in the truth because you know where it comes from. And in that particular sense. And so beauty, of course, has no gender. It has no age. It has no ethnicity. Beauty
no
just
generation.
Simply exists. From a generation, it exists. And so I think that's a really, really great opportunity for us to be able to accept diversity and inclusion, because you may not like the pictures that are on the urn, but chances are you're not going to go crush it to death because you didn't like the pictures. So when you apply that in real life, practical application, real talk here of the way leadership works is that you may not agree with the pictures you see on the urn of the other individual, but that doesn't mean you have to go trash it or crash it, because there can be beauty within the truth of how that person represents themselves.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Which is why, again, I enjoy poetry, period, and I've enjoyed coaching the poetry and prose team, but I was thinking back to what you said about coming in as a clean slate, and we had talked about this in the pre-show, and the final thing we're talking about on the show today, like I said, random thoughts, the last thing that I talked about in that session was the concept of gender. You know, the name of the title that is in all the brochures and stuff that I used to have was Random Thoughts, the three things you're not supposed to talk about at work: religion, politics, and sex. Sex as it relates to gender. And I'll never forget, I was doing a show for the Marketing Association of Credit Unions in Orange County, and I told a story about the first female entrepreneur that I remembered, and it was the Avon lady in my old suburban neighborhood down near San Antonio, Texas. And I remembered her because she would come to the house. And Dr. Troy, there was just no other word for it. She was pretty. You know, my brother and I were like, oh, the Avon lady. So we'd go sit in the living room and watch my mom buy lipstick and blush and enjoy the fact that the Avon lady was pretty. And we liked her, and she was very nice. And she would bring us, you know, lollipops and peppermint candies and stuff like that. Well, a young lady in the back of the room at that session stood up and said, well, I'm a woman and I own a construction company. And she was really ugly about it. And I was thinking, well, I wasn't saying that women couldn't own construction companies. I'm simply saying that in my experience, in the middle class world of, you know, Bexar County, Texas, this was one of my first memories of a female entrepreneur. And I didn't back down and say, oh, I'm so very sorry. I didn't apologize. And I got to tell you, Dr. Troy, after that session, the majority of people thought I should have apologized to her from the stage, the people that took the time to come up and talk to me. And I don't know, to this very day, I think about that. And, you know, I'm the blank slate that comes in, but I'm still going to be me. I'm still going to have that masculine aspect to me. And I think sometimes in our marketplace, we struggle talking about that. I really do.
Well, I think we do, but the one thing to always remember is that, you know, one of the great chances that we have in extending relationships and extending who we are as a people and what makes us different in, as humans, as the humankind, is our opportunity to have empathy with an individual, to understand what they're hearing, seeing, feeling, dealing with, what are they doing, and the biases that this lady, now of course I wasn't there, so but I can just say that it's possible that there's a particular amount of biases that, that she may have had and the way she's had to deal through life and to prove herself as a particular gender to achieve something. And although I never want to take that away from individuals, the one thing we do know when we study the concept of empathy and as leaders and responding to empathy, that we try to connect with bridging that our understanding of where you might be coming from. And so we extend that first. And, of course, we always eliminate in our empathy conversations using things like, at least you have a job, or at least you're able to do that today, you know, so that you, because there's no connection to that. And so I think that, again, always looking at that in those ways that when an individual has taken a stand on something, that the best way to, I'll say diffuse it, but I don't necessarily mean to dismiss it.
Oh, I know what you mean. Diffuse,
yeah, is just to is to make sure that the empathy that you speak from, and here's the other thing too that that really happens, regardless of how that would have turned out and whether people thought you were right or wrong. The difference is you control the environment because you are the speaker. And I always say this too. The person who has who controls it has the microphone.
Right.
So it's kind of like you have the microphone. So you control the tone of the room. You control the tone of that. It's kind of like in the meeting. It's like the person who is the authority kind of person in the group is the person with the microphone. So they kind of control the tone to some degree and can either – make it, you know, feel good or make it not feel good. So I think I say that. The other thing I also say is in all of that empathy, though, there is never a need to have to apologize for an individual. Like you would necessarily have to really apologize for yourself, but you have to ask yourself, and this is in reflection for is your you know, or is your brand a band? You know, did your performance leave them wanting more? Was just to ask, you know, how did you connect? You know, and did you connect in a way? Because her speaking up about that she owns a company and you were talking about the Avon lady, you know, there was
my
no
first thought
I mean,
was, what are you doing here? I mean, there was no one's doing construction here. You know what I mean? It was, and well, I will tell you, I spoke at Mac three times, and that was the last time, by the way, I ever spoke at the Mac event.
Yeah, but I think it just, you know, it is really and truly that there are a lot of issues regarding stereotypes and how individuals are perceived within the stereotypical world. You know, you could even go further with an explanation of your example, and you could have talked about Mary Kay Ash. Mary Kay Ash today is still known as one of the 50 most influential businesswomen in the world with her product of Mary Kay Cosmetics.
Yeah.
And that would not be demeaning in any regard that
exactly.
you would use an example of Mary Kay Ash and
Boom.
You're all of a sudden doing it. But here is the difference in today's language, in today's mindset. This diversity and inclusion also wants to represent individuals in what we consider non-traditional roles. So that when we give examples, and so sometimes as leaders when we're presenting, it's important that we give or qualify our examples in a way that, that shows inclusiveness. That this example is not the only example in our repertoire, but we're going to use this particular example to demonstrate something. And remember that the audience is looking for how we will represent individuals who operate in different roles. And this is sometimes where you end up, like in my family, my son had custody of his two children. when he would talk to people and when he would talk to government agencies and he would try to get support and try to figure out what he could do as a single parent doing that, they didn't know how to deal with him because they assumed that the woman would have custody of the children, and therefore
right.
all of their forms, all of their conversations were all designed around the woman being the primary caregiver for the children, not the male. And so what an interesting twist of events that turned out to be. But I just think all of that's important as we're talking about this gender neutrality, especially when it comes into leadership and how that impacts. And we have to understand there are hot buttons out there for individuals because they feel their voice has not been heard. And so we just need to acknowledge how we hear their voice and then move our session on.
Absolutely. Gender neutrality, that's the hashtag element of it that I couldn't really put together even in the show description. Hey, folks, his name is Dr. Troy Hall. He is the Chief Operating Officer at South Carolina Federal Credit Union from the holy city of Charleston, South Carolina, where even when it rains...
Okay, we're going to read poetry, we're going to be sizzling hot, we're going to be dynamic, we're going to be offering conference-quality material without an expense report. That's what we're going to be doing.
Box check, box check, box check, box check. My name is Jason Dias, broadcasting live from the studio of eloquentonline.net. Until next week, Dr. Troy and I will talk to you all next week. Bye.
The end of the MFR, folks.